The Splendors and Miseries of an Old Bailey Hack.
Some cases of Horace Rumpo, barrister at law. As told to and written down by John Mortimer, with Maurice Denham as Rumpo and Margot Boyd as Hilda. Rumpo and the Defense of Guthrie Featherstone.
One of the hardest defences that I've ever undertaken was that of the middle-of-the-road Conservative Labour MP Guthrie Featherstone. Queen's Counsel, flatterer of solicitors, incessant bower to judges, obsequious player of golf with officials from the Lord Chancellor's office and the somewhat anxious head of our chambers at Equity Court in the Temple. The offence with which Guthrie was charged brought him before a singularly tough and relentless tribunal. His defence was by no means easy. But if you're to understand this case, I should begin late one afternoon last spring, when Miss Phillida Trant, our one and only lady barrister and the Portia of our chambers, knocked on Featherstone's door with the perfectly innocent intention of borrowing a legal textbook. Featherstone's manner, as she described it later to her fiancé, Claude Erskine Brown, was distinctly peculiar.
Oh, I didn't know you were in today. Can I borrow Phipson on evidence?
Pretty dull reading, isn't it? For a gorgeous girl like you.
Rumpel's objecting to us putting in a witness's statement tomorrow.
Ah, you're not still in that dreary case down the Bailey, are you?
Yes, thank God, with some quite decent refreshers.
Ah, pity. We might have had lunch tomorrow. Taking a trip up to the Trattoria Galactica in Fulham Road. You know, that's where all the BPs go.
The what?
The beautiful people. Like you, Miss Trant. Do you always have to wear those spectacles?
Of course. Unless I want to see Phipson on evidence as an impressionist blur.
You know, I used to love those old movies. You know, where the girl librarian took her glasses off and James Stewart saw her in an entirely new light.
Well, thanks for the Phipson.
Any time, Miss Trant. Any time at all. What is that super perfume you're wearing?
Nothing really. I expect it's just old law books.
Do you know Ma Tendresse?
No. Who's she?
Oh, I say, enormously witty. Ma Tendresse is an absolutely super new perfume. Oh. Definitely exotic. You should try it.
I might ask Claude, but he's not much of a one for buying perfume.
No. No, that's the problem with barristers who get keen on commercial law. They lose the talent for giving perfume.
Well, thanks for the book.
I say, Miss Trant, I think you should know. I think we should take on a new young member of Chambers. Apparently a brilliant cross-examiner.
Oh, really?
Yes, I thought you might know her. Her name's Elizabeth Chandler.
A woman?
Probably. If the name's Elizabeth Chandler.
Oh, I don't think we want another woman in Chambers.
You don't? Oh, how very interesting.
No. Henry has to explain to solicitors about it being a woman he's sending down to the indecent assault. He often gets objections.
But you, Miss Trant, you're doing so marvellously well.
Well, I do flatter myself I've been accepted. But I don't think we need another woman.
Look, why don't we have a long, long chat, Miss Trant, on exactly what we do need? And I'd like to discuss your life in the law. Old Keith was telling me the Lord Chancellor's office has definitely got its eye on you.
On me? You must be joking.
No, Miss Trant, I'm not joking at all. Shall we say next Tuesday at the Trattoria Galactica, among the beautiful people?
It was about this time that I was defending an old and regular villain called Bertie Timpson on a charge of being involved in a conspiracy to rob the Tooting branch of the Steadfast Savings Bank, or, in the alternative, carrying housebreaking implements by night. It seems you were caught with the following articles, Bertie. A number of face masks depicting such animals as Mickey Mouse, Pluto and Donald Duck. One brace and bit, one monkey wrench, two hacksaws, three sticks of dynamite with fuses, and four imitation firearms, to which revolvers.
All that in me bleeding voiture, Mr. Rumpo. Never.
Bertie was learning French at evening classes, the better to equip him for his coming holiday in Cannes. He would insist on trying out his linguistic skill on his legal advisers. Now, Mr. Timpson.
Wait, Mr. Rumpo.
The jury are never going to believe you didn't have this stuff in your car. Not if three officers say they saw it there.
I do assure you, Mr. Rumpo.
Now, it may be that you have an innocent explanation for some of these articles.
The carpenter's tools, for instance?
Oh, an innocent explanation. All told you, Mr. Rumpole. I'll have to think about it.
Yeah, you do that. Oh, and Bertie, dépêchez-vous.
Come again, Mr. Rumpole?
Well, you better be quick about it. The trial's in exactly 3 weeks.
But before Bertie Timpson could come to trial, or indeed provide me with his much-needed explanation, those two barristers at law, Guthrie Featherstone and Miss Phyllida Trant, met to lunch tête-à-tête in the Trattoria Galactica among the beautiful people.
Here.
This is for me?
I bought it for you, yes.
Oh, what an enormous bottle.
Well, it's only toilet water, I'm afraid. I mean, who wants to spend £10 on a bottle of the perfume? Well, I mean, when you get so much more with the toilet water.
Oh, exactly. Well, I sort of slosh it around.
Oh, good.
I'm probably absolutely slayed now at London Sessions.
I bought it for you, especially. Ma tendresse.
Yes.
At Harrods. Oh, Claude won't mind you wearing it.
Claude?
Erskine Brown.
No, why should he mind? We're not married, you know.
But engaged.
Anyway, it's going to happen for years. Now, about the girl you're thinking of taking into chambers.
Marriage. It's a funny thing about marriage. Marigold and I, we have our different interests. She has her choral singing with Hilda Rumpole. They're doing the St. Matthew Passion.
I thought you said the Messiah.
Oh, Messiah, Passion.
I see. And what passion are you doing, Featherstone?
Oh, I say, you are sharp, aren't you? But, look here, Phyllis. Do call me Guthrie.
Phyllida.
What?
My name. It's Phyllida.
Oh.
You see, I've been making inquiries about this Elizabeth Chandler person. I'm not at all sure that she's the type that would really muck in at chambers. And also, there are only a certain number of matrimonial disputes where solicitors want women. I mean, are there enough for two?
Oh, matrimonial disputes. Well, there are quite enough of those, God knows. But Marigold and I, we just face facts.
What facts?
Well, we may fancy other people, and, well, other people might fancy us.
Might they?
Yes. You know, we only stick together, of course, for the sake of the children.
Oh, I hadn't heard about the children.
Hadn't you really? Oh, well, there's Arabella.
Mm-hmm.
She goes to this funny little school in Kensington. I mean, she's only eight, but she's already got this extraordinary talent for dancing. And little Luke, well, he's only just three, but I have got him down to Eton. I imagine he might want to come to the bar someday.
Well, and you don't want to fill the chambers up with Elizabeth Chandler.
Look, if you've never actually seen the children, I just happen to have a couple of photographs about me. Only snaps, of course.
Mm-hmm.
We took them in Portofino last long vacation. It wasn't frightfully sunny weather. There, that's Bella, on the terrace of our hotel.
What's she doing? The dying swan?
Yes. Quite the little Margot Fontaine, isn't she? And, oh, and this is old Luke, with his fingers in the spaghetti. Oh, my God.
Oh, what on earth's the matter?
My God. My God.
Featherstone, Guthrie, are you in some sort of pain?
Pain? Yes. Yes, pain. Pain, that's what I mean. Of course, I must dash immediately. Look, I'll pay the bill.
Pay the bill? But we haven't eaten anything.
Goodbye, Phyllida. See you in chambers sometime.
I've been thinking about that load of stuff in the voiture, Mr. Rumpole.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it, Bertie.
I've been remembering.
I had hoped you would.
Them things were all to do with members of the family.
Know what I mean? The Timpson family were a notable clan of South London villains who'd each and every one of them provided work for Rumpole over the years. They were a close-knit family who went into crime as other families go into the law.
Them masks now.
Not disguises for the bank robbery?
Mickey Mouse and Pluto, of course not, Mr. Rumpole. I bought those for Den and Doris Kidd's party.
Ah.
Their little Marilyn's just coming on for nine. Mm. And the toy guns was presents for the kids.
Ah, I see. And the hacksaws and the brace and bit?
DIY.
Come again?
Do-it-yourself shelving, Mr. Rumpole.
Hmm.
Dennett got hold of a nice set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Very useful for the kids' education.
What sort of a lorry was it, I wondered, off the back of which dropped odd sets of the Britannica?
I was going to give him a hand with the shelves. Look, really nice, them books would, in Den's lounge. Trays elegant.
Look, I don't want to ask awkward questions.
Mr. Rumpole, I know you don't.
But the sticks of dynamite, huh?
You want to know the truth?
And that was a question I thought it wise to leave unanswered.
My cousin Cyril's got a cottage down in rural Essex. Charming little place, but the fact is, I don't want to shock the ladies in the jury.
Ooh, carry on, Bertie.
No main drains, Mr. Rumpole. Nothing but a septic affair down the end of the garden. And Mel Heruzimont, this tank gets blocked up. It won't seep away, not as it's meant to. And Cyril's old woman, Betty, she gets on to him about this. Well, how do you unblock a septic tank, Mr. Rumpole?
Oh, I can't really say I've given the matter any thought.
Dynamite. That's the idea I hear on.
It sounds a desperate solution.
Cyril's Betty was getting desperate, Mr. Rumpole. So I happened to meet this Welsh geezer who works in the quarries.
A bloke whose name you can't remember, but you happened to meet in a pub.
How did you know that, Mr. Rumpole?
Well, let's just say from a long experience of the Timpson family defences.
Oh, yes. So, he said he had a bit of dynamite to spare, and I brought a few sticks off him. I put them in the car for next time I was going down to Cyril and Betty's. I'd actually forgotten all about them, if you want to know the truth.
Or could we call Betty Timpson as a witness?
Oh, no, Mr. Rumpole. She wouldn't want to come to court.
So, that's the story.
Exactimo, Mr. Rumpole.
Well, we'll do what we can with it. I can't make any promises.
When I got back to Chambers after my visit to Bertie Timpson and the Brixton Nick, I was surprised to hear from my clerk Henry that there was a lady waiting for me in my room. I opened my door to encounter a handsome young woman, about 35 years of age, cashmere twin set, double row of pearls, and an expression of grim determination.
Mr. Rumpole, we have met over the years at Chambers parties. I'm Marigold Featherstone.
The wife of the QCMP, our head of Chambers.
Oh, yes, of course. But I'll just see if Guthrie's in his room.
Oh, I don't want Guthrie at this particular moment, thank you very much. It's you I want, Mr. Rumpole. Would you mind closing the door?
You want me, Mrs. Featherstone?
Tell me, Mr. Rumpole, do you handle divorce?
Well, only rarely, and then with particularly thick gloves. Why do you ask?
I ask, Mr. Rumpole, because I have need of your services.
Of mine?
For a divorce.
Huh? I mean, who?
My husband, Mr. Rumpole. I'd hardly be bothering to divorce anyone else's husband, would I?
I could see the force of her argument.
I'm afraid Guthrie's gone completely off the rails.
Oh. Well, girl, can you be sure about that? I mean, what's the evidence?
The evidence, Mr. Rumpole, is the evidence of my own eyes.
From that moment, I began to feel pessimistic about the chances of a defence for our learned head of chambers. The eyes of his lady wife were clear and unblinking, the sort of eyes that might well be believed in a court of law.
I was in the perfume department at Harrods, Mr. Rumpole. I was buying my usual little atomizer. Guthrie never brings me perfume home. And I happened to catch sight of him at the Martendresse counter.
He was buying perfume?
Well, Mr. Rumpole, he wasn't buying potatoes.
I began to see that there was a certain ruthless logic about this woman's mind.
Did you confront him?
I moved towards him, but Harrods was extremely crowded on that day, and he escaped furtively.
Did you ask him about it?
No.
Why?
I didn't want to give him a chance to lie to me.
A woman of steel, you'd have to agree, this Mrs. Marigold Featherstone.
Well, I don't see that adds up to much of a case. I mean, he might have been buying scent for anyone. An old aunt, perhaps. Has he got an old auntie with a birthday?
He was buying it, Mr. Rumpole, for the girl he took out to lunch at the Trattoria Galactica.
Oh, yes?
I did my best to sound casual.
And which girl was that?
Oh, some little tart. I don't know her name. My brother Tom was lunching his accountant at the Trattoria Galactica, and he distinctly saw Guthrie at the corner table, gazing into the eyes of this King's Road strumpet.
Mm.
And do you know what Tom saw plonked on her plate?
Tagliatelle verdi.
A great big bottle of Martendresse, the toilet water. Of course, as soon as he caught sight of Tom, Guthrie simply got up and legged it. He's a terrible Cuthbert, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Featherstone, if I were to act for you in this dispute with your husband...
Yes?
Well, the head of Chambers, it would cause enormous embarrassment.
If I'm divorcing Guthrie, Mr. Rumpole, embarrassment's just what I intend to cause. Mm.
Well, leave it with me, Mrs. Featherstone. I'll think it over. There's one infallible rule in the law. If your back's up against the wall, play for time.
I shall call on you next week, Mr. Rumpole. Then I shall expect your answer.
Ah, me for aught that ever I could read. Could ever hear by tale or history the course of true love never did run smooth.
Are you coming to bed, Rumpole?
But either it was different in blood, or if there were a sympathy in choice. War, death, or sickness did lay siege to it, making it momentary as a sound, swift as a shadow, short as any dream.
No, do come to bed, Rumpole. You catch your death standing there in your pajamas.
Mm. Oh, Marigold Featherstone wants to divorce the QCMP.
I know that.
You do?
Seem to forget. Marigold and I go to choir together. Mm. We're doing the St. Matthew Passion.
You mean to say you interrupt that sacred music to discuss the amorous adventures of Guthrie Featherstone?
Of course we do. Marigold wants you to act for her in the divorce.
Oh, I can't do that. I never prosecute. I'll have to defend Guthrie Featherstone.
Defend him? But he's got a floozy, Rumpole. Why ever should you do that?
I suppose because the old thing's in trouble. Don't you move over a bit, Hilda?
Right. But he's got a floozy.
Perhaps he imagines he's in love. Love, it seems to be, is overestimated by the poet. If all the time I've devoted in my life to the passion of love were laid end to end, I doubt if it would fill up a single summer holiday.
I doubt it would, Rumpole.
Of course, I was somewhat smitten by the poor girl I was engaged to when I was up at Oxford.
So you told me.
The engagement had to be broken off. By reason of her sudden death. I'll talk to old Guthrie tomorrow. See if we can't dream up some kind of a defense. All right.
Marigold can't have seen me in the perfume department.
She has the evidence of her own eyes. I'm afraid she's prepared to believe them.
All in the restaurant.
Well, there, the prosecution relies on her brother's testimony.
Tom must have been mistaken.
Look, unlikely. And even if he were...
Yes?
In view of the nature of the tribunal, I think he's likely to be believed.
Rumpole, I rely on you.
Yes, I know.
Marigold simply won't discuss the matter with me. Mm. She refuses to speak.
So you rely on me to defend you?
Please, Rumpole.
You know, nothing's so unconvincing as a bare denial. That's what I told Bertie Timpson.
Who the hell's Bertie Timpson?
Oh, just one of my other villains.
Rumpole.
Come out with a bare denial, I told Bertie, and no one believes you. Now, if the truth of the matter is that you were in the perfume department...
But there is some quite innocent explanation.
Featherstone was taking to the life of crime like a duck to water. And you're sitting in the restaurant with whoever it was.
Does Marigold know who it was?
Well, not by name. She says she was a floozy, some little tart from the King's Road.
Oh, Rumpole. It was Phillida.
Huh? Can you possibly be Miss Phillida Trant, member of this distinguished chambers?
Yes, Rumpole. I'm afraid that's exactly who it was.
Well, then, if there is an innocent explanation...
Of course, Rumpole. Entirely innocent.
We could call Miss Phillida Trant to give evidence. I imagine she's a witness who would carry a good deal of weight, even with the most obstinate.
Well, no. No, I don't think we could really ask Phillida.
As with Bertie Timpson, I saw the red light at once. There is no course more fatal to the defence than calling an unhelpful witness.
Your lady wife says she'll be back to speak to me.
Tell her, Rumpel. She'll listen to you. I'm sure she'll listen. Well,
tell her? Of course I'll tell her. I'll put your case to her, fair and square. The only problem is, Featherstone, my old darling defendant.
Yes?
As yet, I have absolutely no idea what your case is.
I'll think about it.
Well, you'd better think quickly. Marigold will be here in exactly a week's time. In my humble submission to the court... I mean to you, Mrs. Featherstone. You have absolutely no reason for a divorce. Or indeed to feel any emotion except conjugal love and gratitude towards my client. I mean your husband.
What should I say? Thank you very much, Guthrie, for messing about with the floozy.
And on that charge, I shall be able to demonstrate that Guthrie Featherstone, QC, MP, is entirely innocent.
Innocent?
Oh, yes. All men are innocent until they're proven guilty.
Well, he is proven guilty, as you call it, by the evidence of my own eyes, and of Tom's eyes.
Mrs. Featherstone, when is your wedding anniversary?
Next month, the 21st. Guthrie always forgets it.
Well, this year he didn't forget it. He remembered it most devotedly. Tell me, Mrs. Featherstone, do you like Marton Dress perfume?
Oh, I've absolutely no idea. I've never tried it.
Ah, then it'll be a new experience. Your husband hopes you'll find it enjoyable.
What on earth do you mean?
He went into Harrods to buy you a large bottle of Marton Dress as a present for your wedding day.
Tom saw him in the restaurant.
The purely circumstantial evidence on which so many people have been wrongly convicted.
You're not suggesting Tom was mistaken.
Not in what he saw, but in the interpretation to be placed upon it. You see, Guthrie had just slipped into the trattoria, and he happened to see a lady, a member of the bar, as a matter of fact, waiting for a girlfriend.
A member of the bar?
Oh, yes, Mrs. Featherstone, a profession open to all sorts and conditions of men and women. He sat down to chat to her about a case they were involved in, and then he left her. Her friend never turned up, and she went shortly afterwards.
But they opened a parcel. A bottle of scent.
Of course. He wanted her opinion, as a woman rather than a lawyer, on his choice of a present for you.
Oh, really? And why did he happen to slip into the Trattoria Galactica?
Can't you guess?
I certainly can't.
He went in to book a table, of course. It's there he intends to take you out for a slap-up spread, Mrs. Featherstone, with champagne laid on regardless to celebrate a decade of happy marriage on the 21st of next month.
How did it go, Rumpel?
I think I can say, Featherstone, that it was touch and go until my final speech.
What did you say?
I reminded the court that she enjoyed considerable status as your wife.
Yeah.
In the course of time, she would almost certainly become Lady Marigold when you're elevated to the High Court bench. I think that tipped the scales.
And the result was?
I would say a conditional discharge. Tell Guthrie I'll forget the divorce, she said, if he puts his back into being made a judge.
Oh, splendid, Francis. Splendid. Yes, I'm playing golf at the weekend with Mr. Justice Wasper and old Keith from the Lord Chancellor's office. I think they have a good deal of influence in judicial appointments.
No, I think they have. Mm. Well, I think you've got off extremely lightly, I must say.
Well, yes.
For the mere cost of a bottle of French Pong, slap-up do at the Itai restaurant, and a dozen of the best claret Pomeroy's wine bar can provide.
A dozen of claret?
Or should we say 24? Yeah, 24 is a good round number, and the advocate, as you know, my old darling, is worthy of his hire. Oh, by the way, Featherstone, if you're playing golf with Mr. Justice Fosford, do try not to win. I hear his lordship doesn't like to lose at golf.
Right, Curry. Tee up for me, will you? Yes, as I was saying, it's a funny thing, Filson, what makes a fellow judge material. Am I right, Keith?
A funny thing, yes, Judge. That's what I'm always saying.
You needn't be a great lawyer or a great advocate, even. Of course you need common sense. Isn't that right, Keith?
Common sense. That's perfectly right, Judge.
And complete respectability. Hey, Keith.
Respectability, of course, Judge.
No good having Her Majesty's judge dragged through the divorce courts. Would you say that, Keith?
No good at all.
It'd be unthinkable. Good Lord. Did I slice that? Hardly at all, Judge. Also, a potential judge needs to come from a respectable set of chambers. Now, who's in your chambers, Featherston? Not that fellow Rumpo. Fellow with a peculiar old hat.
Well, there are lots of fellows apart from Rumpo, Judge. You know Claude Erskine Brown? Mm. A very good class of practice. Does a lot of civil.
Oh, well, that's a bit better than Rumpel's life of crime. Civil, eh? Hmm. All the same, respectability's the thing. Mm. Brilliant man. Who should be nameless? Came from a set of chambers where they were always getting divorced. Ah. Hopping in and out of bed with their lady pupils. Never cut his bottom near the High Court bench. Now, come on, drive off, Helston. Also, you have to do your cases in a judicial manner. You can always tell if a fellow has the judicial attitude in court.
Judicial.
Aren't you going to drive, Featherston? Or shall we wait here all day?
No, Judge. Of course not.
Super shot.
My God, Featherston. You're on the green. Last.
In due course, the unfortunate Featherstone appeared before Mr. Justice Fosper to prosecute Bertie Timpson for his alleged part in the conspiracy to rob the Tooting Savings Bank. On the day he was due to make his final speech, we chatted outside the court.
I shall have something to say about your ridiculous defense, Rumpo.
Oh? I suppose that if you really want the High Court bench, you'll have to start doing your cases in a different sort of way.
What sort of way do you mean exactly, Rumpo?
Well, I mean, stop trying to win too hard.
Huh?
Didn't old Vosper tell you to adopt the judicial attitude?
The judicial attitude? Of course. Yes. Yes, I shall certainly adopt it.
Yes, Mr. Featherstone?
My lord. Members of the jury, as prosecuting counsel, I adopt an attitude which is quite fair and, I hope, judicial. The prosecution has to prove its case. And if it doesn't do so, the defense is entitled to succeed.
That's the way, Featherstone, my old darling.
If you think Mr. Bertie Timpson might possibly have won the money in his bank account at the races, even if he has forgotten the name of the horse and even the track concerned, then you must acquit him. If you think he may have been taking those various animal masks to a children's party, or if you think he needed those heavy tools to put up do-it-yourself shoving to accommodate his relative's Encyclopedia Britannica, then the prosecution will not have proved its case. And the defendant Timpson is entitled to be acquitted. In all things, we must be judicial, totally fair, and keep a balanced view. We must judge all things fairly.
When he was eventually acquitted, Bertie Timpson had a question for me.
What was up with that prosecution brief, Mr. Rumpo? Was he ill or something?
Not ill, just suffering the terrible consequences of love.
That was Maurice Denham as Rumpo, Margot Boyd as Hilda, and Michael Spice as Guthrie Featherstone in The Defense of Guthrie Featherstone. Mr. Justice Vosper was played by Robert Harris, Keith Lockwood West, Miss Trant, Amanda Murray, Marigold Featherstone, Angela Thorne, and Bertie Timpson, Michael Elphick. Rumpo and the Defense of Guthrie Featherstone was written by John Mortimer and directed by Peter King.